This is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for July the 12th, 2024. Hello. Welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending July the 12th, 2024. First of all, an apology. The magazine, which should have come to you last weekend, was delayed, unfortunately, but you will receive it with this copy of the newspaper. So, reading today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Richard Stead.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm Noel Thorpe Tracy. The headlines today are Fresh Hopes and Fears for a New Town, New GP Surgery Taking Shape in the City Centre, and New MP Grateful for the Constituents' Welcome. So, may we have the first headline story, please, Heather?
Fresh Hopes and Fears for a New Town. A developer is buoyed by Labour's housing goals, by Andrew Napier. A developer battling to build a new town near Winchester has been buoyed by the housing ambitions of the new Labour government. The O'Flynn Group proposes a 6,000 home town around Mitchell Devers Station, which is pictured left, and his fields, a campaign started by the previous landowner in 1969. Local people and environmentalists have successfully battled the proposals for 35 years. The new government wants to kick-start a wave of housing building and backs the ideas of new towns and mandatory house-building targets. A spokesperson for the O'Flynn Group said the Labour announcements would impact on their Mitchell Devers plans. It is clear that there will be fundamental changes to the planning system under the new Labour government elected last week, and we welcome the speech made by Rachel Reeves, the new Chancellor of the Exchequer, on Monday, which confirmed the much-anticipated change in direction on planning policy. The spokesperson added, "This included announcing the restoration of mandatory house-building targets, confirming the new pro-growth direction will be issued to local government and action to unlock some of the major stalled development sites across the country. Labour has also signalled that new towns are part of the solution to the country's housing needs and are likely to feature in the new government's legislative programme to be announced next week. Winchester City Council, along with all its neighbouring councils, will need to think whether their emerging local plans reflect this new agenda. As promoters of the land at Mitchell Devers Station, we stand ready to meet the area's economic and housing development needs at a location that can provide the infrastructure to deliver a truly sustainable development." Opponents of the O'Flynn plans have been hit by the decision of Basingstoke and Deane Borough Council to earmark Popham Airfield as a potential site for housing. The airfield is on the edge of the new town boundary. More than 400 objections have been received to the idea. Battling the new town for 35 years has been the Deva Society. In a statement to the Chronicle this week, it said, "The Society is of course concerned at the potential implications of the new government's policies on planning. We have always supported new housing that's appropriate and in the right place. The many small housing developments that have been built in our area over recent years have strengthened our communities. But a large new town such as that proposed for Mitchell Devers, possibly combined with the proposed garden village on Popham Airfield, is not sustainable and is in the wrong place to solve housing demand in Hampshire." Local politicians repeated their opposition to the plans and said Labour had made similar noises about development in the past. Councillor Martin Todd, City Council leader, said, "Our district faced the question of a potential new town at Mitchell Devers Station when Labour were last in power. I opposed it then, and I'm not persuaded now, for many of the same reasons. In the end, it came to nothing. The idea of a Popham new town is even worse." He said, "Winchester doesn't need a new town to hit its housing targets. Even though the government is making the current housing targets mandatory, our draft local plan delivers those targets without needing to concrete over the countryside.
Now, Richard.
Headline: new GP surgery taking shape in the city centre. Work is progressing on a new Winchester city centre surgery. The new St Clement surgery is being built on the former car park on the corner of Friarsgate and Upper Brook Street as a replacement for the practice in Tanner Street. According to a new newsletter, the construction is on track for a September completion. The newsletter says the main structure of the building has now been completed and the building is nearly watertight. With the external brickwork almost complete, you will be able to see the building taking shape. Internal works are now progressing with the windows currently being installed. Over the next 4 to 6 weeks, you will likely see more external works taking place. A part of these works will be carried out off-site by an independent contractor, and this is to facilitate power to the building. Your patience throughout these works is much appreciated. As previously reported, Pangbourne Contracting is currently carrying out work to connect the new surgery to the main power grid. Some of the works have been disrupting traffic on Friarsgate, with Simon Turpin, director of the Brook Shopping Centre, warning that the works still impact tenants there. The new development will accommodate staff and patients, 15 consulting rooms, 3 treatment rooms, admin facilities, larger reception, waiting areas and staff parking. For more information, visit stclementsmedicalbuild.co.uk. Meanwhile, the current surgery on Tanner Street is being marketed for letting. It is owned by former city councillor Kim Gottlieb.
Now, Jane.
And here we have new MP is grateful for constituents' welcome. Danny Chambers, the new MP for Winchester, has said that he feels welcomed by his constituents since his election. Mr. Chambers won the seat for the Liberal Democrats on Thursday, July the 4th, in the general election. The Conservatives had held the seat since 2010. Mr. Chambers won the constituency with 29,939 seats of the votes, beating Tory hopeful Flick Drummond, who got 16,118 votes. His majority of 13,821 is the largest for the Lib Dems in the constituency since Mark Oughton won the seat in the re-election of November 1997, after his famous disputed two-vote victory in May 1997. In third was Reform UK candidate Sean Whelan with 4,797 votes. Speaking to the Hampshire Chronicle in the days following his election, Mr. Chambers said, "Well, it's only just settling in. What was really nice is that I went to Meanstoke Village Fair on Saturday, July the 6th, and they asked me to judge the dog show. So if anyone is worried that I'm missing work with animals, I still got to do that. I had such a warm welcome there, people wanting to say hello and say congratulations. I also went to the opening of the Hat Fair on Friday night, and that had such a good atmosphere as well. You could see that Winchester felt happy and positive and excited." Previously a vet in the Winchester area, Mr. Chambers said that he stepped down from his job when the election was called in May so he could campaign full time. When asked about his priorities as an MP, Mr. Chambers said, "Ah, there are so many things to focus on. One of my personal passions is improving mental health, especially mental health for young people. I am a trustee of a mental health charity. But specific issues, people are worried about NHS services, they're worried about sewage being poured in rivers as well." The full result was Liberal Democrat Danny Chambers, 29,939. Conservative Flick Drummond, 16,118. Reform UK, Sean Whelan, 4,797. Labour, Hannah Dawson, 3,023. Green, Lorraine Estelle, 2,740. Social Democrat Party, Andrew Davis, 146. Independent Chris Barfoot, 142. Independent Kevin DeCruz, 127. Independent Andy Liming, 44. Turnout, 73.2%, down from 78.2% in 2019 and 78.8% in 2017. And this is accompanied by a very happy photo of all the Lib Dems together with their yellow labels on them, waving happily. And they've chosen the gym to celebrate. And this is obviously because they felt they'd reached a goal.
That concludes the headlines for this week. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our free recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. And that number can be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Now we'll proceed with the death notices, Christian comment, letters to the editor, Belgarum, first person and editorial comment, and then we'll continue with items of general news. Here are the death notices. Bartlett, June Bartlett, peacefully on the 8th of June, 2024, aged 94 years. Coleman, Brian John Coleman, on 31st of May, 2024, aged 83 years. Walter, Richard John Walter, on the 12th of June, 2024. Whittier, Geoffrey Whittier, aged 89. Hall, Charles Anthony Hall, died peacefully at the farm on 28th of June, 2024, aged 94. Herridge, John Sidney Herridge, passed away peacefully in his sleep on the 25th of June, 2024, aged 90 years. Hill, William Radcliffe Hill, died peacefully at home after a long illness. Rogers, Kate Rogers, died away peacefully on the 29th of June, 2024, aged 96 years. And finally, Stedman, Bruce Peter Stedman, passed away peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 1st of July, 2024, aged 68 years. And now time for Christian comment, which is written by Philip Frinks and read by Heather.
And Philip Frinks is discussing the servant as leader. In the City of London, the story is told of a young fund manager who decided to leave the large bank where he had been trained and set up on his own, determined to make a big splash. Brass plate outside the door with his name on it, thick carpets everywhere, expensive antiques in the outer office, a big mahogany desk for him in the inner one, and an expensive high-tech phone purchased for the desk. On the morning of his first day, he settled in. Then he spotted a man coming into the outer office. Ooh. Don't know who he is, he thought, but I need to show I'm a real player, that I can handle the big stuff. So he picked up the handset on his phone and started to speak as if he were talking to a rich client. Oh, £20 million deal is, yeah, we can do that. Sure, no problem. New York? Hong Kong? Paris? Next week? Sure, you got it. And then he slammed the phone down and called out to the visitor, good morning, can I help you? And the man said, yeah, I'm from BT. I've come to activate your phone line. A better, certainly a less embarrassing leadership story is that of Robert Greenleaf, an American born in Indiana, who was recruited in 1926 by AT&T, the Atlantic Telephone and Telegraph Company. He'd gained a degree in maths from Carleton College. Greenleaf was a Quaker by background, quickly recognised as both highly intelligent and compassionate. He had a particularly broad and humane understanding of people and business, and rose rapidly in AT&T, becoming first a regional manager, then its first director of management development, and making the first appointments of black Americans and of women into management positions during the 1950s in America. In 1964, Greenleaf retired from AT&T, but his real contribution was just beginning. He developed the ideas he had pursued into a new concept and published a slim pamphlet, which would become a world-famous document called The Servant as Leader. The highest form of leadership, he argued, lay in a commitment to serve others, modelled by Jesus in his washing of his disciples' feet before his passion. This symbolised the need to sacrifice one's own ego as a leader, and sometimes much more than that. Greenleaf's ideas and the Christian principles he drew on have transformed the way that leaders are trained in major institutions around the world. He titled his eventual book Servant Leadership, A Journey into the Nature of Legitimate Power and Greatness. As we pray for our newly elected political leaders, and as we reflect on our own call to service, whether in a workplace or a household or our community, let us pray for inspiration by that same vision of service to others. May we and all who lead reflect the way of Christ, who taught his disciples that whoever wished to be first among them must be their servant, just as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many.
Thank you. So, there are 10 letters this week, and we're beginning with one read by Richard.
This letter from 10 signatories is entitled World Class. We are sure you agree that for many years Winchester Cathedral's musicians have not only enhanced the joy of worship, but also enriched beyond measure the musical life of Winchester and the surrounding area. The Cathedral's world-class music directors, organists, lay clerks and former choristers have used their extraordinary talents to inspire and nurture our many local high-quality amateur choirs, helping us as expert choral and orchestral conductors, piano and organ accompanists and soloists. Winchester's rich choral culture draws singers and audiences to participate in music-making of the highest quality in the city's churches. Our music making enhances the community's spirit, creating a sense of belonging, and act as a magnet for thousands of visitors, contributing to Winchester's vibrancy and commercial life. The Cathedral's musicians have, for decades, been both the pinnacle and guiding light of musical achievement in Winchester. We are deeply concerned by the imminent departure, for unexplained reasons, of Dr. Andrew Lumsden, one of England's top conductors and organists, as well as the loss of lay clerks and organists, and that the Cathedral's musical reputation and influence are being undermined by reports that could inflict lasting damage. We have heard the Dean's assurances about fostering and investing in the Cathedral's musicians. I hope you agree that words are not enough. Winchester's musical community needs the Cathedral to rebuild its complement of comparable, highly respected, and multi-talented musicians who can continue to give leadership and assistance to the wider musical community and maintain Winchester Cathedral's national musical reputation. And this is sent by 10 signatories, all of whom are noted people within the musical communities, not just of Hampshire, but from a far wider region.
And on the same theme, this letter from Anna Ditchmont. My grandfather, Alwyn Surplice, was organist and master of the choristers at Winchester from 1949 to 1971. He was an immensely kind and gentle man who built up the music as best as he could in those difficult post-war years. As a young child, I would often sit on the organ bench with him during services, pulling the curtain aside to peep down at the choir. My grandfather could only have dreamed of the international recognition the choir would come to enjoy, expertly nurtured by his successors. There is now a fight for the choir's very existence. The last few years have seen such a mass exodus of professional musicians, the latest being Dr. Lumsden, the much-loved director of music for 22 years, whose sudden and unexpected departure remains unexplained. At the centre of all this are serious allegations of bullying, intimidation, gaslighting, and poor governance on the part of the clergy. The documented evidence of this must be given the consideration it warrants. The clergy's attempts to cover up their behaviour is further undermining the trust and respect that should be the cornerstone of our religious communities. I want to thank those who are working tirelessly to uncover the truth. On behalf of Olwyn, thank you from the bottom of my heart. The news of the bishop commissioning an inquiry is encouraging, and I hope it will lead to an open acknowledgement of wrongdoing and compensation to those affected. And that is from Anna Ditchmont, Coach Road, Chichester.
Wendy Draper also comments on the situation at the cathedral. I refer to the letter last week from Mr. Mayor regarding the controversy currently over events at the cathedral. Mr. Mayor states that he knows nothing about the situation, but then gives a very firm opinion on the matter. Much of the controversy is based on ignorance of the facts, fueled by the wretched influence of social media, which I and many do not follow. I do trust those appointed by the bishop to carry out an independent review into the events that have led to this situation in order to resolve it. I would also urge outsiders to the details, yes, even amongst the cathedral congregation, to desist from further stoking matters until the outcome of the review is available. Wendy Draper, Crescent Close, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
Now I have a letter from Kevin De Cruz entitled Thanks to Voters. I would like to thank the voters of Winchester who voted for me in the recent general election. As an independent, it was always going to be impossible to be elected, but at least I managed to highlight my local policies and also to advocate changing our unfair voting system to proportional representation, where every vote would count. It was lovely to meet all the candidates and the people on the doorstep, and I wish the victor, Liberal Democrat Danny Chambers, every success, as I am sure he was the right choice for Winchester. Good luck, Danny, and see you around the constituency. And this is from Kevin De Cruz, former independent parliamentary candidate for Winchester, of Pine Road in Bishop's Waltham.
And Roy Faithful writes, further to John Seager Green's letter, Chronicle July the 4th, I was also surprised by the item in the Hampshire Chronicle about faults in the Friar's Gate surgery. I've been a patient there for over 50 years, and I've always received kind, gentle, and almost always strong support and help from the doctors and nursing staff, and I think the care navigation team deals with problems very efficiently. This has been especially noteworthy for me lately when an item in my annual health monitoring was picked up by my GP for further investigation to show a cardiac problem which was potentially very dangerous and which proved to need fairly prompt surgery, which I have now undergone. And that was from Roy Faithful, Minstead Close, Hairstock in Winchester, and perhaps explains why, if you recognise his name, Roy is not with us here on the team today and hasn't been for a while. And we hope, Roy, that you will be back with us soon and feeling fit and healthy.
Yes, certainly we do.
John Seager Green writes about invisible policemen. On Saturday afternoon, June the 6th, there was a scaffolder's lorry parked within the forbidden parking zone beside the zebra crossing on St. Cross Road by Cannon Street, totally obscuring the view of anyone driving from the city centre of any pedestrians attempting to cross the road. There was no attempt being made to control traffic, no temporary traffic lights. It was merely an accident waiting to happen, so I sought the telephone number of Winchester Police Station to report the matter. Quite clearly, such a telephone number is considered either a matter of state security, since I was unable to find it published anywhere on the internet, or the police in Winchester have no wish to be disturbed while supposedly on duty serving the public in the warmth and comfort of their station. After all, it was a blustery, occasionally rainy day, and I'm sure there was some sport on the television to watch. I'm a simple-minded chap, and I find it extraordinary that a public service such as the police should not be contactable on the telephone by way of a published telephone number, when an emergency call is not appropriate. It is even more extraordinary that our government and our councils should allow such a situation to exist, says John Seeger Green of St Cross Road, St Cross, Winchester.
Now we have a letter from Rebecca Hiscock, which is entitled Helen's Role in Reviving Hat Fairs. And this is accompanied by a photograph from more than 20 years ago of one of the original performers greeting lots of school children. On the 50th anniversary celebrations of Hat Fair, I have seen no mention of the person who was decisive in reviving Hat Fair and putting it on course to be the major event it is today. Mm. That is Helen Kent. In the mid-1980s, Hat Fair had become associated with drunken brawling and general rowdiness, and the City Council had refused to allow it to continue. In 1987, Helen was persuaded by the original founder of Hat Fair, Jonathan Kay, to take on the task of trying to re-establish the event. She asked me to work alongside her. Because of the trouble at previous Hat Fairs, our work initially involved a considerable amount of delicate negotiation and diplomacy. Winning the trust of a few local councillors, including Judith Martin, amongst others, we eventually persuaded the council to give us the go-ahead, but with big restrictions in place. There was to be no electronic amplifications, no road closures, and certainly no use of the Broadway for staged music on Saturday evening. The council made it very clear that this was our last chance to prove that Hat Fair could be a safe and family-friendly celebration. With limited performance spaces, we desperately needed to make use of the cathedral grounds. Negotiations with Dean Trevor Beeson took place, with promises and assurances from ourselves that noise and litter would be tightly managed. We won the support of the Dean. It was only once we knew we could use the outer close that we were confident the event could work. Fortunately, Hat Fair still had a significant local fan base, and Helen was able to muster and inspire an army of volunteers. Struggling with limited funding, we were also hugely lucky in harnessing the goodwill of local businesses, like Sarson Press, who gave crucial help with printing and publicity. We quickly developed a good relationship with local schools, engaging primary school children in the High Street procession in the Hat Fair Friday, and running a competition for children to design the Hat Fair poster. We were able to use the very fine St. John's rooms for the Friday night cabaret, but it was a struggle to think how to manage the street-based Saturday night finale with no lamps, no amps, and no stage. Eventually, we booked a fantastic steel band who played in the shadow of the Buttercross. The sun set and stretched the last of its warm rays down the High Street. There was a lot of joyful dancing that Saturday night. All the diplomacy and hard work carried out mostly around Helen's overloaded kitchen table had paid off. The 1987 event was a success and laid the foundations for Hat Fair's revival. Helen went on to run the festival for a few more years. As it gradually grew in size and garnered more secure support and funding, she died in 2010, but it seemed to me important to acknowledge her very significant contribution to Hat Fair's history and the continued success of the festival in Winchester. Mm. And that was from Rebecca Hiscock of Colebrook Street in Winchester.
Mm. And here we have Friar's Gate Praise. I would like to add my voice to your four published correspondence last week in praise of Friar's Gate, and in particular raise concerns about the CQC's own practice. Whilst it records Friars Gate's responsiveness as outstanding, it took them over 6 months to publish its own report in June 2024, following their inspection in December 2023. By their own ratings, that would warrant a grading of inadequate. Also worrying that Friars Gate is not the only practice experiencing these delays across the country. Having worked for health, children's and social care regulatory bodies previously, I am very conscious of the impact a damning report can have, particularly on staff morale, demonstrated recently by the tragic Ofsted issues in the field of school inspections. I fall into their category of people with long-term conditions, etc., of which they are most critical, and like others, have received excellent services from Friars Gate for over 30 years, from the days of Drs. Roddy Morton, Nigel Sylvester and Martin Diaper, to today with remarkable support from Dr. Selvaratnam. I therefore hope Friars Gate staff can take some comfort from the many concerns regarding the CQC and the compliments offered by their grateful patients. And that is from Terry Butler, Lansdowne Avenue, St. Cross in Winchester.
And Eunice Stevens writes about parental duties. George Medd's letter in the Chronicle of June the 20th poses the question whether youth crime could be fought by reforming schools. Aren't schools doing enough already? Breakfast clubs for many children who would otherwise have to concentrate all morning without sustenance, not uniquely restricted to impoverished families. After-school clubs for children of all socio-economic groups whose parents are unable to collect their children at the end of the school day. Potty training for children up to the age of 7. Teaching our children to speak. 25% of early years foundation stage children cannot communicate orally, simply because they have not been spoken to. I am wondering where parental responsibility factors into George's question. Politicians citing poverty, austerity, the pandemic, quite frankly do not cut the mustard. We elderly citizens have lived through extremely difficult times in this country and abroad. It was and still is uniquely when parents fail to recognise their duty to educate their children effectively about the difference between right and wrong that hideous crimes arise. Perhaps they should put down their phones from time to time. Eunice Stevens, Cliffway, Compton, Winchester.
Now a letter from G.N. Barrett, entitled Don't Flood Fields. Thames Water is talking about removing acres of farmland for a reservoir. No way. Why not carry out similar to what was done up north? Dig into the hill and build a massive stainless steel tank, then cover all up. This could be done under the South Downs. No sore points, just a sensible answer to the water problem. Far too much arable land is being removed. Not good for the climate, as it puts more pressure on the third world to increase deforestation in order to meet our food requirements. Mm-hmm. And that was from G.N. Barrett of Nicholson Place, Alsford.
Thanks to all the correspondents. You can contact the Hampshire Chronicle at any time by writing to 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL, or by phone on 01962 860 836, 01962 860 836. Now, Jane has Belgarum, an alternative look at the news.
And the first part of Belgarum this week is Film Lifts Lid on Hat Fair. A new documentary, Street Life, A History of the Hat Fair, lifts the lid on Winchester Hat Fair. Through archive material and interviews, the film traces the Hat Fair's journey from its original form as a small-scale improvised gathering to the huge festival it is today. It also uncovers the early days of the Attic Theatre, whose members helped found the festival. The fair is the longest-running festival of street theatre in the UK. It started in 1974 and is celebrating its 50th anniversary in 2024. The festival's name comes from the performer's habit of asking audience members to put donations in a hat. Mime artist Jonathan Kay, who founded and directed the company, is accredited for the creation of the Hat Fair. Today, Jonathan works as a performer and teacher touring the world. The City Council and local businesses initially opposed the Hat Fair, but have since been won over, not least because the three-day event is big business. It attracts more than 90,000 people each year. Street Life aims to portray the spirit of the Hat Fair and the people who make it happen. Director Laurent Matrique works with artists and communities and takes a particular interest in alternative movements and grassroots actions. And this section is accompanied by a delightful black and white photo from the Hat Fair in the 1970s, and all the young men are in very 70s gear with very long hippie hair and little round glasses, and many with beards and tatty shirts undone down to the waist, exposing their hairy chests, and one little old man with a flat cap on, looking as if he forgot to put his teeth in, and a selection of women also smiling in their 1970s clothes and beaming at the Hat Fair events. And the second article is Psychological Thriller on the Way. A psychological thriller set in Winchester is set to be released later this year. The latest in author David Palin's series of crime novels will see DCI Ben Logan grace the streets of the old Anglo-Saxon capital as he tries to solve a mysterious crime. Other books in the series include The Armistice Killer and This Changed Everything. DCI Logan is a damaged character who suffers from a condition called prosopagnosia, or facial blindness, which means he cannot remember faces, which has forced him to find another way of remembering people. His condition has been a curse and a blessing, as he sees things that others cannot. The new book delves into DCI Logan's troubled past and ties up loose ends from some of Mr. Palin's other novels. And the date of publication will be announced shortly.
Thank you. Now, Heather is going to read this week's first person, which is by Joanna Lewis.
And she follows the theme of put down your phones. What an honour last week to have an upcoming local fashion designer put together an outfit for me. She so got me. Orange flared trousers and matching top with purple trimmings, nipped in waist, flouncy layers. It would have been perfect for the Banny Manilow concert last month. It effortlessly channeled Copacabana vibe. She lost her youth and she lost her love, and now she's lost her mind. That's from the song Dear Readers. It's not my new byline. But it was also a breath of fresh air. For this vision came from the extensive drawing book of a 12-year-old. Yes, hold the front page, editor. A young person not on their mobile phone 8 hours a day. Instead, she is drawing, crafting, colouring, singing in musicals, having dancing lessons and more. Thank heaven schools are now taking the damaging effects of mobile phone usage seriously and banning them, as her state school has done. As Eton will do from September. Exactly how corrosive and not smart mobile phones are is confirmed by the latest research. They are actually lowering IQ. Our national decline seems complete. From a nation of shopkeepers to a nation of shoplifters, now we are perilously close to becoming a massive blob of downward-facing thickies. I'm not immune. The other day I got into a huge panic. Have you seen my phone, Chris? I need to urgently look up something for Mum. My tone implied he was somehow implicated in its disappearance, and his cool reply, it's in your hand, you're on your phone talking to her. My phone is reflecting back an image of me I don't like. I once watched a reel of clips showing men having accidents in golf buggies. Yes, it was funny. But the algorithm now regularly sends me similar. Am I really no better than someone whose hobby is watching men being catapulted out of trees when their attempt at chainsawing goes wrong, or sliding down a scaffolding ladder at 90 miles an hour? I would go further. I would also ban people from using a phone while walking. I notice people locked into staring down into their phones, totally unaware of their surroundings, walking in town. Where is the interaction with the world around you? The evidence shows that since smartphones took over in 2014, the younger generation have been steadily missing out on learning vital social skills and from real-life experience. I would also add a new crime against humanity to the Geneva Convention. At The Hague, on trial without impunity, would be all adults using a mobile phone in a crowded place whilst dragging a small suitcase behind them on a fully extended handle. Dodging offenders at Waterloo Station has made me more agile and forward-passing than half the England squad. We adults need to set an example by switching our phones off. Let's throw down the holiday challenge and impose a collective ban. It is going to take planning on the scale of the D-Day landings. For example, the car journey I spy, or name that car, will not last much beyond the next county. So what about a collective Room 101 competition? What would you ban and why? Or taking pens and paper for drawing competitions? Is it too outrageous to suggest setting a reading a book challenge? After all, it may well rain every day. Is it hopelessly nostalgic to suggest packing some old-fashioned board games? A guide to card games? The old saying was, idle hands make for the devil's work. It's true. We were kept distracted and out of remand homes well into our teens by making stuff. We were painting stones, embroidering drink mats badly, and knitting scarves for guinea pigs. All the important life skills learnt in one summer. Now hands are occupied by mindless scrolling and endless hair-checking. Phones are just expensive mirrors. Let's put them down.
Finally, Richard has got the editorial comment.
And this is the editorial comment from the Hampshire Chronicle. And it's headed, "Despite election, new town still wrong." Change. That was the campaign slogan for the Labour Party in its landslide election victory last week. After 14 years of the Conservatives, millions of people voted for change. Yet there are many people in the Winchester area who hope that change will not apply to the long-running battle over the new town at Mitchell Devastation. One of Labour's key national policies was house building. As we report on the front page, the O'Flynn Group, the landowner of the estate around Mitchell Devastation, is hoping that it will finally trigger success for their plans for a huge new town after 35 years. The new Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rachel Reeves, has pledged to loosen planning restrictions to boost development and with it the economy. Martin Todd, leader of Winchester City Council, and Gordon Brown as PM in 2007 made similar noises about new towns. It raised hopes for the then landowner Zurich Eagle Star that never materialised. Campaigners and local politicians showed that a new town at Mitchell Dever would be unsustainable. The Chronicle agrees it would be disastrous. But do not assume that the Chronicle is a dinosaur that views every field and every tree as sacred. Major development has to happen, and Winchester is little different to any other large town in this country. The best location for any major house building would be in an area such as between Kings Barton and Three Maids Hill. Talking of Kings Barton, at the current rate of construction, it will be decades before the 2000 home estate is completed. The new Labour government should certainly look at ways of making developers build to meet housing needs and not to control supply to maximise their own profits.
Now we have items of general news, starting with one read by Jane.
And here we have Hannah Swims Peer-to-Peer to Aid Charity. A Winchester woman recently completed the Bournemouth Peer-to-Peer Swim to raise money for the British Heart Foundation, that's the BHF. Hannah Gurnham, 43, joined 1,200 wet-suited swimmers taking on the 1.4-mile swim between Bournemouth and Boscombe Pier to help the BHF fund research into new treatments and cures for heart and circulatory diseases on Saturday, June the 29th. Sponsors, Jazz Apples, made sure they were at the core of the event with their fruitful new addition to Bournemouth Beach, their giant apple boy. Hannah is a passionate open water swimmer. She zipped up her wetsuit and snapped on her goggles because she liked the challenge of taking on one of the largest open water swimming events in Europe. She had unfinished business with the Bournemouth Peer-to-Peer Swim after taking part 2 years ago and having to do a circular route for safety reasons. Hannah found the water quite choppy and the first half of the swim challenging. She said the event brought people together and that there was great solidarity. Getting back onto dry land at the finishing line on bustling Boscombe Beach, Hannah said, "Taking part in the 2024 Bournemouth Peer-to-Peer for the British Heart Foundation was such a challenge and an incredible experience. The atmosphere was so much fun. Being surrounded by people all swimming for the same cause was amazing, and everyone was so encouraging. It made me even more determined to power on to the finish. The research that the BHF does makes such a difference to the 7.6 million people in the UK living with heart and circulatory diseases, so I'm proud to know I'm doing as much as I can to support their amazing work to help fund the next big scientific breakthrough. Since it was first held in 1992, more than 34,000 people have taken part in the BHF's peer-to-peer swim. Now, in its 33rd year, the event has raised around £4 million for research into heart and circulatory conditions. Kate Sparks, senior events manager at the BHF, added, "It's fantastic to see Hannah's passion and determination in helping us fund life-saving research. Without the support of people like Hannah, we wouldn't be able to help revolutionise treatments and transform the lives of millions of people living with heart and circulatory diseases in the UK. For those who are feeling inspired, entries are now open for next year's Bournemouth Peer-to-Peer Swim, so we'd urge everyone to take the plunge now to help us fund vital research to save and improve more lives." And this is accompanied by a beautiful photo of Bournemouth Pier stretching out into the sea, and next to that is Hannah Gurnham, and she's obviously just done the swim because she's very tightly wrapped in her wetsuit with her red tight hat and goggles round the top of her head, but holding up her medal and beaming broadly.
Rather her than me. Anyway, so Heather.
Evening of Literature recalls the Swing Riots. St Mary's Church in Mitchell-Dever has hosted an evening of literature in memory of the Swing Riots. A packed audience at St Mary's on Saturday, June the 22nd, was entertained by a rich mix of poetry and prose, along with folk music, from the era of Captain Swing and the rural riots in his name in the 1820s. Presented by the English Project, as part of its bicentenary commemoration of the riots by farm workers across Hampshire and the south of England, the show featured poems such as Mitchell-Dever by J.R. Ackerley, which recounts the story of Henry Cook, the youngest rioter to be executed, who came from Mitchell-Dever. The Riot by Hannah Moore described two impoverished men who are debating whether or not they should set out on a path of destruction. Performed by actors Sam Collins and Nigel Bradshaw, backed up by two professors from the University of Winchester, Christopher Mulvey and Bill Lucas, the show combined a mix of serious and light-hearted material. including the folk singing of members of the Wayne Fleet Singers, Susan Millen, John Lunt and Catherine Tucker. Passages from William Cobbett's famous rural rides reflected on how much the conditions in the English rural counties had changed as a result of enclosures, and the increasingly intrusive buying up of farms by wealthy financiers from London. "This was the first outing of a message to Mischeldever," explained Edward Fennell, the producer, "and we're very encouraged by how well it has been received. With minor adaptations, we feel that it could go very well across many of the country's communities, almost anywhere which had a riot, and there were 70 areas which would find it relevant." The Swing Riots took place in the autumn of 1830 and involved thousands of men across almost every part of Hampshire. The riots were put down vigorously by the Duke of Wellington, then a Lord Lieutenant, and a grand assize was held in the Great Hall in Winchester, which sentenced hundreds of men to death or transportation to Australia.
Now we've got an article about young adults hospice hosts fun-filled Jestival. Young Adults Hospice, Jack's Place in Sutton Scrotney, held its annual festival, Jestival, last weekend. Centre users, as well as their families and friends, enjoyed live music, games and even mocktails designed by the participants. Claire Potterton, play and activities leader, said, "There are so many festivals on at this time of year, so it felt like the perfect time for us to bring everyone together here for an extra special summer celebration for our young adults in the comfort of the Jack's Place grounds." Participants danced to music from bands from the area, Firefly and Fables, who volunteered their time. Fables band members Emily and Justin said, "Festival was amazing. We were lucky to get the warm, sunny version instead of a bring your wellies kind of day. And in the dancing and singing, and you can wrap Jestival up in one word, perfect. The best part of any festival or gig is the people. A special thanks to Jude's Ice Cream, who donated ice cream for the event, and the Boaz Project, who gifted hay bales."
And here we have Bishop's Waltham shines in sun with festival success. Bishop's Waltham festival organisers are celebrating another successful event. The summer season opened in May with the annual Come and Sing, when 40 people came together to create a choir in a day. Under the direction of Andrew Cleary, they worked hard and at the end of the day presented a free concert in St Peter's. Tunes were mainly songs from well-known musicals, including Les Miserables. On Friday, June the 28th, 170 children from seven schools arrived at Bishop's Waltham Palace. The project was supported by St Peter's and Bishop's Waltham Parish Council. Saturday, June the 29th, had Brandon Block as the headline act. The sold-out show got underway at 3 p.m. and the music never stopped. Artists included Sue Apicella, Mojo Dollar, 19 Forever, The Petites, The Jays and Dan Apps. The final day, on Sunday, June the 30th, was more relaxed. In the afternoon, This Is My Theatre Company presented The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. That same evening, they welcomed back Rain or Shine Theatre Company, who presented Oscar Wilde's The Importance of Being Earnest. The organisers said, "We are extraordinarily grateful to English Heritage and the Museum for trusting us to use their wonderful site to the benefit of so many in the town. Our volunteer stewards surpassed themselves. We're so grateful to them for giving up their time so freely. We are also most grateful to our many sponsors and funding bodies who support us financially and in kind, because of course none of this is cheap. At the time of writing, it seems we will make a small surplus on the year, all of which will be used to develop our creative programme into the future. We must also thank Best Wishes in Brook Street, who provide our town ticket sales. Finally, we are very pleased that the festival team has grown in numbers through the year, so we should be poised to develop our programme as the cycle continues and we start the planning for 2025. Please let us know what you think, and of course we're always grateful for offers of help and support. And this is surrounded by pictures of very happy people at the festival in sunglasses. It was clearly a lovely day, a lovely weekend. And they're having to hide under covers at some point because it's so sunny and enjoying the music. But also on the Sunday, it clearly was not raining, because there they are in the beautiful ruins of the Bishop's Waltham Palace, the performance of a classic play with all the audience sitting round watching them.
Preschool marks its first 40 years, and above the headline is a picture of seven smiling women who are the preschool committee and who organise this. And in front of them is a very elaborately decorated cake with strawberries on the top and swags round the side. Looks delicious. A Winchester preschool has celebrated the 40th anniversary of its founding. Current and former pupils at St Paul's Preschool joined staff to mark the occasion with a picnic in St Paul's Meadow on Saturday, June the 22nd. The festivities included a bake sale, face painting, smoothie making, hooker duck and ceramic painting, facilitated by Sunnyside Art Studio. And there's a picture of a very, very serious, very small boy, and he's having his face painted in a rather elegant style, and he's absolutely intensely fixated on watching the woman who's wielding the paintbrush. The day also featured a special performance by the current preschool children, led by Sylvia Brown, who's been the teaching lead for 13 years. Past and present teachers also surprised attendees by singing Heads, Shoulders, Knees and Toes. Michelle Beck, chairperson for the preschool, said, "St Paul's Preschool is a much cherished part of the Winchester community. Our 40th anniversary is a testament to the unwavering commitment of staff and the supporting network of families who've made the preschool such a success over the years."
This is entitled Extra Performances of Captain Corelli Play Added. A production at a Winchester theatre has proven so popular that a second performance has now been added. That is, a second extra performance, I should say. Tickets for the Chesil's Theatre adaptation of Captain Corelli's Mandolin are in such high demand, a preview performance has been added on Friday, July 12th. The story traces the lives of the community of the Greek island of Kefalonia during the foreign occupation in World War II, that is, occupation by the Italian forces. The captivating narrative challenges the protagonists to reconsider their loyalties and the value of freedom. The locals, including Pelagia, despite initially detesting the Italian occupiers, find themselves drawn to the likeable Captain Antonio Corelli. Director Eleanor Marsden said, "The hard-working cast and crew are bringing to life this vivid drama about the struggles of the Greek people under occupation." The show runs from July 13 to July 20, with a matinee on July 14, and together another extra performance on the closing day of the 20th at 2:30 in the afternoon. And it's accompanied by a photograph of a young, handsome Italian soldier, along with the beautiful Greek local girl.
And here we have Leisure Centre is one of UK's best. A city leisure centre is one of the best in the country, according to industry chiefs. Winchester Sport and Leisure Park is one of the top leisure facilities after achieving the elite outstanding rating from Quest, the leading national quality scheme for the leisure industry. The centre underwent a two-day evaluation covering everything from tackling inequalities to environmental management practices. Winchester Sport and Leisure Park, managed by Everyone Active in partnership with Winchester City Council, is one of just three facilities in England to achieve this result. It opened in 2021, replacing the River Park Leisure Centre, which had opened in the 1980s. Quest, Sport England's continuous improvement tool for leisure facilities, was established more than 20 years ago. The leisure centre also went through a mystery visit by achieving an overall rating of excellent in both Quest Plus and its mystery visit. Winchester Sport and Leisure Park has been awarded the accolade of Quest Outstanding. Standout areas for the centre included team management, swimming lessons, exercise referral scheme, health and safety standards, and accessibility. Alison Lewis from Everyone Active said, "We are tremendously proud of this achievement, which reflects our team's unwavering commitment to excellent service and positive community impact. Quest's outstanding rating is the gold standard attained by only the most exceptional leisure centres nationally. Quest is much more than a tick box exercise. It is an ongoing programme to improve our facility for both staff and customers, and a great way to demonstrate our achievements." Quest's managing director, Caroline Constantine, said, "Quest Plus is such a demanding process. By meeting Quest's high standards for excellent centres and achieving an overall accolade of outstanding, Winchester Sport and Leisure Park has shown its commitment to provide quality facilities and service to its customers." And there's a photograph of a very pleased-looking team holding up their accolade notice, and there are certainly all sorts of things which you can do at the Sport and Leisure Centre, not just a sport, should anybody be interested.
The Turkish restaurant that hits the bullseye. It felt a bit wrong going into Turquoise's dark interior at 8 o'clock on a Tuesday evening after work, when the sun was still blazing on one of the warmest days of the year so far. This Turkish restaurant's in the building, a beautiful old old timber frame house on Jewellery Street, where Loch Fyne once was. After a long refurbishment, Turquoise opened its doors to customers just before Christmas and recently asked the Chronicle to come along for a review. So my dining companion and I sat down indoors. The internal courtyard was full, on one of the plush blue sofas that line the walls. The menu had a good selection of gluten-free options, and you can choose from a range of lighter tapas-style starters or some of the meatier Turkish classics, or both in our case. We ordered some Turkish wine to stay on topic, a first for both of us. The white Cavalcadera Kankaya from a vineyard near Ankara was distinctly quaffable. The service was smooth throughout, and our waitress, Gila from Uzbekistan, was more than happy to answer all of our pedantic questions about the food. Which brings us to the starters. We thought we'd try the sautéed calf's liver, a Turkish dish called kayga tavel, and the scallops. But these were the only dishes all evening which were a little disappointing. Gila explained the scallops were defrosted and the liver was a bit too chewy for our tastes. After that, though, things got better and better. For our mains, we went for the Ali Nazik, a kind of lamb meatball dish, and a mixed izgara dish of grilled lamb and pork, and both came with sides of rice. The izgara was fantastic, the charcoal grill bringing out the full flavour of the meat, and the spices in the Ali Nazik were not dulled down for the benefit of our mild British palates, and the portions were generous as well. The sweets menu mixed British and Turkish cuisine, so we went for the pears poached in red wine with ice cream, which was divine. And after that, the irrepressibly hospitable Gila insisted we try some of the cocktails. My martini was great, and my companion's pomegranate gin fizz was just as good. Around then, we thought the evening was over, but no. Apparently, there was a darts board upstairs which we had to try, but we're both terrible at darts, so we'll pass that over.
Sorry. Now an article headed, "Award Honours Architect's Career." A renowned Winchester architect has been recognised for her achievements in the field with a coveted award. Kate McIntosh, won the 2024 AJ 100 Contribution to the Profession Award after topping a poll of AJ 100 practice employees. Previous winners include Peter Barber, Grafton Architects, founders Yvonne Farrell and Shelley McNamara, Pooja Agrawal of Public Practice, and Zaha Hadid. Ms. McIntosh, 87, of West End Terrace, West Hill, studied at the Edinburgh College of Art and worked for Dennis Lansdown at the National Theatre before moving into the public sector with the London Borough of Southwark. Here, while still in her 20s, she designed her tour de force, the landmark Dawson's Heights in East Dulwich, southeast London. Later, at the London Borough of Lambeth, she completed the celebrated sheltered housing development of 269 Leon Court Road, now Grade 2 listed. It has been renamed the McIntosh Court in her honour. Like Dawson's Height, which includes a mix of differently sized family units, the scheme succeeds on both an architectural and a social level. After moving out of London, Ms. McIntosh designed many civic buildings for East Sussex and Hampshire County Councils, including schools, fire stations, playgrounds, and social housing. Ms. McIntosh was presented with her award, the AJ 100 Gala event, at the AJ 100 Gala event on Friday, June the 21st in London. She said, "It's very thrilling. I keep on campaigning in defence of social housing. There are increasing challenges around demand to cater for the housing needs of poorer people and public servants." On the ceremony itself, Ms. McIntosh said, "It was very celebratory. It was so gratifying to see so many young women in the industry. It's about a 50-50 split now of male and female architects. When I started my career in 1961, there were only about 4% of women. However, women have a bigger dropout rate now because of the culture of working long hours and the costs of childcare. In Scandinavia, there are more female architects because childcare is cheaper." Established in 1995, the AJ 100 survey is the definitive annual record of the UK's largest architecture practices, measured by the number of architects employed in the UK.
And here we have decision delay over Army Base. Winchester residents will have to wait an additional month before a decision is made on major plans for a former army base. As previously reported, developers have applied to Winchester City Council for permission to develop unused land at Bushfield Camp into a business park. The application was submitted to the council last October by the Church Commissioners in partnership with Legal and General Investment Management, LGIM, and Gisborne. However, National Highways has asked that the council makes no decision on the application until August the 28th. In a consultee comment, the government agency said that it has requested the delay to enable further information to be provided by the applicant and to allow National Highways to provide the local planning authority with fully formed advice. When asked about the delay, City Councillor Brian Laming, local member for Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery Ward, said, "There's not a lot we can say or do because we do not know what the comments from Highways are going to be. Their comments are quite important, as because a lot of the development hinges on how you get people in and out of the site, and it needs to be done in a sustainable way. There is a lack of public transport in the area, and there is a lack of cycleways. So what Highways England says matters a great deal." He continued, "I think people are looking to make sure that everything is done in a correct manner." Councillor Jan Warwick, local member for Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery, said, "Well, I'm pleased they're taking a bit more time to consider the Highways impact. There are a couple of impacts, but Highways is probably the most worrying one for local residents. I think it's 5,500 additional car movements a day, with particular focus on peak hours with the traffic. And that is a concern. It's not just the local traffic, it's on the motorway network as well. so I'm pleased they're looking at that again. We absolutely have to get this right. If Highways is giving...
Go.
Here we have decision delay over Army base. Winchester residents will have to wait an additional month before a decision is made on major plans for a former army base. As previously reported, developers have applied to Winchester City Council for permission to develop unused land at Bushfield Camp. Yeah. Decision delay over army base. Winchester residents will have to wait an additional month before a decision is made on major plans for a former army base. As previously reported, developers have applied to Winchester City Council for permission to develop unused land at Bushfield Camp into a business park. The application was submitted to the Council last October by the Church Commissioners in partnership with Legal and General Investment Management, LGIM, and Gisborne. However, National Highways has asked that the Council makes no decision on the application until August the 28th. In the consultee comment, the government agency said that it has requested the delay to enable further information to be provided by the applicant and to allow National Highways to provide the local planning authority with fully formed advice. When asked about the delay, City Councillor Brian Laming, local member for Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery Ward, said, "Well, there's not a lot we can say or do because we do not know what the comments from Highways are going to be. Their comments are quite important, as because a lot of the development hinges on how you get people in and out of the site, it needs to be done in a sustainable way. There is a lack of public transport in the area, and there is a lack of cycleways, so what Highways England says matters a great deal." He continued, "I think people are looking to make sure that everything is done in the correct manner." Councillor Jan Warwick, local member for Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery, said, "I'm pleased they're taking a bit more time to consider the Highways impact. There are a couple of impacts, but Highways is probably the most worrying one for local residents. I think it's 5,500 additional car movements a day, with particular focus on peak hours with the traffic, and that is a concern. It's not just the local traffic, it's on the motorway network as well, so I'm pleased they're looking at that again. We absolutely have to get this right. If Highways is giving very careful consideration to their response, that is very reassuring to me, so I think we're happy to wait to get it right." Tom Southgate, Senior Asset Manager for Church Commissioners, said that the delay was expected. And this is accompanied by the usual photograph of a potential view of Bushfield Camp in the future, with the business park in the background hidden by trees, and a long cycle path with two enthusiastic cyclers going along it to get to Badger Farm.
Jail medical emergency ruling. Staff at Winchester Prison have been told not to allow inmates to fetch medical equipment in an emergency. It follows an investigation into a prisoner's death and the slight delay that occurred after his son, a fellow inmate, went to get a blood pressure machine. He was turned away and one of the prison officers had to then collect it instead. Sean Huntoid was taken ill on May the 7th, 2020, and a report into his death has been published following an investigation by the Prisons and Probation Ombudsman. The report says, "Mr. Huntoid had type 2 diabetes and cirrhosis of the liver. He also had a significant history of illicit drug and alcohol misuse." Just after 4 o'clock, an officer called for a member of healthcare to check on Mr. Huntoid after he said he felt funny. The officer thought Mr. Huntoid was under the influence of drugs, and Mr. Huntoid confirmed he had smoked spice, an illicit psychoactive substance. The report says a prison paramedic was unable to obtain a blood pressure reading. A post-mortem examination found he'd suffered catastrophic internal bleeding caused by cirrhosis of the liver. And the report says the care he received in jail was equivalent to what could have been expected in the community.
This is headed, Cafe offers more than breakfast and lunch. When I saw that the Cabinet Rooms was top of the TripAdvisor recommendation for best cafes in Winchester, I couldn't wait to try it. And the venue in Jury Street didn't disappoint. I couldn't have had a more calming environment. Walking through the front door, I was presented with a warm greeting from the staff who directed me to a table. I sat down and looked at the easy-to-read menu, listening to old-school music ringing from the 60s and the 70s. The cafe also supplies free Wi-Fi for those who want to enjoy some food and drink, as well as completing their work. Before my lunch at the Cabinet Rooms, I'd spoken to owners Marcus and Gary, who gave me an excellent summary of what the cafe is about. They said their cafe offers more than just breakfast and lunch. It's open for a grown-up safe place in the evenings, serving alcoholic drinks like cider and cocktails, as well as snack-based foods. As well as food and drink, the cafe hosts screenings and group discussions, all making the venue more than just a cafe. But I was there to try the food, and the soup of the day struck me as a good choice at £8.25 from among many lunch options. It arrived and was delicious, homemade and filling. It even came with a cheese toasty on the side to dunk. The cafe felt relaxing, nothing too loud to distract people from their conversation or from doing work. The theme of the cafe is clear to all. It's based on comfort and is bounded by black and grey walls for that relaxing atmosphere. The staff were all lovely and so polite, providing complimentary water for the table. Another customer didn't know what a matcha latte was, and the staff were kind enough to explain what it was thoroughly. The Cabinet Room serves great hot drinks. I went for the hot chocolate at £3.85, but was extremely tempted by the deluxe hot chocolate, which tastes like cake. My lunch bill came to £12.10, a reasonable price for such a great place. The cafe's cutlery was immaculate, everything neatly polished, and the food was cooked exquisitely. Cabinet Rooms is certainly deserving of its number one spot on TripAdvisor, and I will be sure to come to the number one cafe in Winchester again.
Now, head teacher's marathon walk for funds. A head teacher from a Winchester primary school has walked a marathon in a day to raise money for a good cause. Inspired by her efforts, the school children matched her efforts, and they have also raised thousands of pounds towards school equipment and a sensory den for children with additional needs. Sarah Duck, the head teacher at St Bede's C of E Primary School, recently completed the Clarendon Way, walking 26 miles and finishing at the school to rapturous applause and banner waving from the children. The school's HSA, Home School Association, launched a fundraising campaign called My Marathon Miles, which challenged the children to walk, run, swim, hike, scoot, hop, or skip their way to 26 miles over a one-month period. Apologise for that. Apologies. The children took on the challenge with gusto and clocked up more than 5,500 miles and raised more than £7,500 for the school. To add a competitive edge, house points were awarded to the house who completed the most miles. Mrs. Duck said, "The children have done a fantastic job and have raised an astonishing £7,500, which would be put towards much-needed investment in the school, improving their playground and creating a sensory den for children who can find the classroom challenging at times. I couldn't be more proud of them." Nicola Dolman, chair of the HSA, said, "We were thrilled that the children, parents and teachers got behind the fundraiser. Mrs. Duck set a great example, and a few of the children managed to notch up over 100 miles. The excitement and determination from the children blew us away. And this is accompanied by a lovely picture of Mrs. Duck, a lovely name for a head teacher, having arrived back from her marathon with all the children and the other staff standing around with flowers for her and a great big cuddly toys as well they're holding up and a great big notice saying, "You are a star."
Trend-setting tale of a thrift shop. A Hampshire innovator has released a new book called The Swish and sparked a sustainable fashion movement for young people. Tash Bell has written a story promoting creativity, confidence and the art of upcycling clothes. Tash is the brainchild behind a flourishing sustainable fashion trend and offers workshops at Meadow in Stockbridge. A former TV presenter and family features journalist, Tash launched theswish.co.uk to motivate and equip young people to embrace upcycling and thrift shopping, as well as making their own clothes. She said, "This is great for the planet and kids' pockets. Sewing and crafting boost mental health, build confidence and send serotonin sky high." Tash's site runs workshops for schools, charities and young caregivers, sharing sewing skills and upcycling techniques to transform old clothes into new outfits. It also includes rescuing textiles otherwise doomed to landfill. So far, highlights have included 10,000 girl guides sewing across the Southwest for their Swish Fashion Upcycling badge, and a Swish workshop residency at the Green Man Festival. Tash wrote her novel, The Swish, to support her work. It tells the story of a thrift shop Cinderella who battles bullies and her family's financial problems when she dares to make her own gown for the school prom. Mm-hmm.
Professor survives fall down mountain. A professor from a Hampshire village has survived falling down a mountain in Scotland. Professor Neil Gregor, 54, of Richmond Park, Otterbourne, had hiked up Ben Aig in the Northwest Highlands when he lost his footing and tumbled 100 feet. "I bounced four or five times, a couple of times on my head," Neil told the Chronicle. "I'm very, very lucky. It could have ended very differently. Neil and his walking partner, Matt Kelly, 49, from Northumbria, had finished their ascent and were hiking down when the incident happened on June 25th. He said, "We were very much at the end of our walk on this peak and just about to head down for a beer. I just lost my footing. I had a tumble and fell about 100 feet down the scree belly." Neil, who is a professor of modern European history at the University of Southampton, was left with a broken wrist, vertebrae and ribs, and was unable to move. As an experienced walker, luckily he was well equipped. "I was carrying a tracer with me. If you have an accident, you can call for help and they can locate you. The Torridon Mountain Rescue Team sent a helicopter out, but conditions were far less than ideal. We were very near the top of the mountain, so it was very hard for the mountain rescue to get to us, explained Neil. "It was so cloudy that they couldn't see us from the helicopter. They had to leave a crew halfway down the mountain, who then walked up to us. We could hear the helicopter flying away, which was a bit discouraging. They got to us at about 10 p.m. We had been there for about 5 hours already. They then sent a couple of hours preparing me to be lifted out on this stretcher thing." When asked whether the experience had been a little scary, Neil said, "I don't know about scary. We were both quite calm people. We knew we would be rescued." After he had been airlifted to safety, he spent 3 days in hospital and a few more convalescing at a friend's home in Scotland and before travelling home. He is overwhelmed with gratitude to the Torridon Mountain Rescue Team, who worked until past midnight to lift him out of danger.
and now new health shop, food shop due to open. A new health food shop is opening on Winchester High Street later this month. Grape Tree, a chain selling nuts, dried fruits and supplements, will start trading on Friday, July the 19th. The store is currently undergoing refurbishment in the building where Shuropody, the high street shoe shop and chiropractor, closed its doors to customers in June with no warning. A sign at the shop front window was advertising job vacancies for those interested in working at the new store. Grape Tree founder Nick Schutz told the Chronicle, "We're delighted to be opening in Winchester. We're looking forward to bringing our Grape Tree feel-good food message to the town and to welcoming customers into the store."
Live music event, Quaker Jam, is a hit. Winchester Quakers hosted Quaker Jam, a pocket-sized festival, on Saturday, June the 22nd. It's one of a series of events being held in 16 Colebrook Street this year to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Meeting House and to thank the local community for their ongoing support. Gloria's sun shone down on the 150-plus guests as they listened to songs by local musicians Sarah Rose and Eric Walker, and classical arrangements performed by guitarist Nina Redoubt and pianist Tony Stoller, and ukuleles played by Andy Martin and his Moon Roller Band. The Quaker Jam programme was put together in collaboration with Sound Winchester, a community project launched earlier this year. Project coordinator Peter Brown ran an improvisation workshop called Decorating the Silence, referring to the stillness found in Quaker meetings, in which everyone present was invited to grab an instrument and play or sing along.
And that's all we have for you this week, and apologies for the breaks with the fire alarm, which was not anything to do with a fire. Please return the memory stick in the plastic wallet as soon as you have finished with it. And thanks to this week's editors and all the other volunteers who prepare, copy and dispatch our free recordings to you. Goodbye from us, Heather.
Goodbye.
Richard.
Goodbye.
Jane.
Goodbye.
And me, Noel Thorpe Tracy. I hope this year's summer will stop playing hide and seek and put its hat on properly. Goodbye. That's all we have for you this week. Please return the memory stick in the plastic wallet as soon as you've finished with it. And thanks to this week's editors and to all the other volunteers who prepare, copy and dispatch our free recordings to you. I hope this year's summer will stop playing hide and seek and put its hat on properly. Goodbye.